Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. And Panel, we've got a lot to talk about today, stuff that happened late last week, earlier this week, and yesterday, and today, quite frankly. But the first thing I want to ask Sikonathi, because you've written about this a lot, is the PRC. Dan Majila is gone with immediate effect, although he seems to have some argument with that. What does it mean? Why should we be concerned? The FM, we've got both the editor and the deputy editor of the FM with us today. The FM says his resignation is cause for concern. I thought we wanted him to go.
No, the politicians did, not us.
Right. Is that the cause for concern?
Absolutely. For Dan Majila has really been fighting for his job, particularly since Malusi Gigaba became finance minister. If you remember, a month after that, Malusi appointed his deputy Sifiso Buthelezi, a man who's got quite an interesting relationship with money as well. And we have he appointed Xolani Mkhwanazi and Mathuko Mokoka. Those people, a month after their appointment onto the board of the PIC, Daniel Majila had been accused and facing an investigation of funding money, the PIC's money, to what we were told was his girlfriend. And a month later...
Just remind us, because the deputy finance minister is normally the chairman of the PIC board, right?
Traditionally.
Yeah.
And that's not in the law. But the finance minister is the shareholder.
Under Malusi, then it was his deputy who was chairman.
Yes.
And that was, remind me, I can't remember.
Sifiso Buthelezi.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So every finance minister has put on the board of the PIC as chairman his own deputy.
Yeah.
So Kikaba continued with that tradition, and we have now the deputy finance minister, Montlhiko Ngubele, as chairman of the PIC. Yeah. And Majila has really been fighting for his job, many things, including the allegations. Then Geoff Badlander, after the board of the PIC, under the leadership of Sifiso Buthelezi, said, we're investigating him, and then now we've cleared him, but we'll do an investigation in September and October. All of those came out and said Majila is not guilty of anything.
Including Badlander's report?
Badlander's report has not been released to the public.
Yeah.
What has been released or what has been leaked out is one segment of it, in which the report is alleged to say Daniel Majila has got no romantic relationship whatsoever with Pretty Low, and that one David Mahlobo actually did introduce Pretty to Daniel Majila and asked for financial assistance on her behalf, which of course Majila then irregularly, it would seem, did afford. But the gist of the matter is, Majila is not the first executive in the PIC to just leave like that because he's now fallen out of favor with politicians, and not once has there been an explanation as to what has he done. Elias Masilela exactly resigned like that, and everybody keeps ignoring the fact that these are people in charge of 2 trillion rand of
public. But I mean, the story about Elias Masilela, if I remember it rightly, Rob, was that Dan Majila himself was part of the coup.
Masilela. But I think the point is that in this case, you know, it is the largest investment manager on the continent. It controls civil servants' money, and we don't know what's happening inside. We don't know the actual gravity of the allegations against Daniel Majila. He's allowed to just leave. We should have full insight into what happened, what went wrong, and what's going wrong with the governance at this
institution.
But isn't
there going to be now a commission of inquiry, which has got quite a short time to function, into some of the deals that were done? In other words, the financing or the funding, for example, of Iqbal Surveys companies or the NIEF ones that were going to be listed and they weren't, and including the purchase and acquisition of independent newspapers.
And various other deals. Erin Energy, which was, you know, Kessler Wall ran that thing.
Right.
He was good friends with Jacob Zuma.
But if we get Majila offered to resign, he said in 6 months' time. And the board is, I mean, I think the board sat down and said no, that because there was a breakdown of trust basically between himself and the board.
Do you think they made a mistake?
By accepting his resignation? Yeah. No, I think it was perfect to do that. I think he would have been a problem when the whole inquiry and... When you think Majila's been a PIC 15 years odd, he's an institution within PIC. He's a systemic risk to PIC. I think they made the right call by moving. But I think everything that's gone wrong in the PIC centers around Majela, sure. Whether he collapsed the chief investment officer position and made chief investment officer and CEO one position, basically yeah. made himself so central to the cog of the PIC. I think he's...
But he was also good at his job, didn't he? Because the PIC outperformed the market, from what I...
But it's kind of like it's difficult.
Or can anyone outperform
yes,
the market?
Yes, because you basically own the JSC. The JSC rises, PIC does well, right? And the question of the PIC was always the unlisted segment. And there were some questionable deals there that people are asking questions about, right? And rightfully so. And the central cog to the whole thing is Dan Majela. So I think that PIC, the board did the right thing. He offered to design first, and the board said, no, we're going to wait 6 months for you to design.
But let's just come back to Sekonati here. What I don't understand is, what is there a political agenda behind Majela going? And if there is, what is it?
Yes, there is.
One.
Every politician that gets into the union buildings has a problem at Luthuli House, which is a funding for the ANC as a start. We are approaching an election. Two, Malusi Gigaba came in and had a budget that really needed billions and billions of rand, and they identified the funds under the PIC, and the PIC said, no, we're not giving our money to South African Airways, we're not giving our money to Eskom, because our pensioners, our beneficiaries, need the money. So they manufactured all these charges to get him out of the way, which did not stick. Now, the transparency. Badlander's report, he did the investigation. It was finished 2 months ago. The Public Investment Corporation's board has not published those findings. We don't know what's the problem. Now, take a step back. Every president and every finance minister has come with their own chief executive at the PIC. Whether that is coincident or not, I do not know. Brian Mulefe served under Thabo Mbeki and Trevor Manuel. Elias Maselela was handpicked and brought in by Jacob Zuma when he was outside of the PIC after Mulefe left. There was Daniel Majela there. You could make the argument that Majela should have gotten the job back then, but Maselela proved...
Majela made an argument, that's why he knifed Maselela.
Exactly. So you could make the argument that Maselela proved useless to Zuma or obstructed Zuma's projects, which is Majela then made himself very useful, and they knifed Maselela out. The same thing has now happened to Majela.
But you cannot... Majela
has always played politics himself, so you can't sit there and say, oh, he's a pawn in this whole game. He's played the factions of the ANC. So defending Majela, he's played the factions of
exactly what I am saying. They brought in a guy because Zuma knew Maselela very well. When he was in exile, he lived in Elias Maselela's home in Swaziland. So he thought, I'm bringing my own man, it's going to do what I want. And Elias was like, no, that's not going to happen.
So basically, there's no explanation as to why he's been let go.
There's no explanation.
Other than party funding.
It's not even party funding. There's a lot, like Ron pointed out, the unlisted deals is where all this corruption happens.
Yeah.
And the important thing here, all the corruption, or at least more than half of it, comes with the politicians, as it does with Eskom, Transnet, all the companies owned by the state, because the finance minister unilaterally appoints a board, fires the board, including the chief executive and chief finance officer.
Yeah.
That is the biggest problem.
Okay, so this new commission, who's going to run it?
It's a former Reserve Bank governor, Jill Marcus.
Oh, Jill Marcus.
Jill Marcus is going to be helping.
With some help, she's got two assessors.
With quite a few other
assessors.
Senior people.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she's got until the end of April, I think, before the election.
Before the election.
Yeah. Okay,
I mean,
cool.
This is...
And Patrick Bulger, John Steenhouse is the chief whip of the DA. Turns out doesn't have a degree. I've got a degree, which is why I can be a real journalist.
But journalism degree, Peter. Come on.
I'm officially qualified.
Say, real journalists don't have degrees.
I know. Look, I don't tell many people. I haven't up until now that I've got a degree in journalism.
Nobody will know.
I'm not too proud of it. And I usually call it a BA. But anyway, there we go.
Yeah.
But John Steenhuisen, who I think is probably the most effective person I've ever seen standing up in this parliament, doesn't, and has come under all sorts of fire from within his own party, or some people obviously stirring it up for him. But he came back very nicely yesterday. I don't know whether you saw him standing in parliament.
Yeah.
Is it a thing?
Well, it certainly is a thing. I mean, if they make it a rule that you have to have a degree to serve in the, you know, as chief whip, for example, well, that's him out, unless he can get a quick sort of 2-month degree. I guess sort of in his favour.
You can do these things.
What he's got in his favour is that he never claimed to have a degree.
Yeah, so he hasn't been lying about his qualifications or anything like that.
You know, and of course it's being said in the DA among those opposed to him that had he been black, he would never have got in that position without a degree. Mm. Well, that's a moot point. Mm. But I think as you point out,
Let's first agree on that. That is really true, though.
Well, I'm not sure the sort of...
The DA puts you right now, and Steenhuisen sits in that panel where they select public representatives. There's many loops to jump over for any candidate, including qualifications. Yes, of course, the Constitution of the Republic sends anyone who's over 18 to Parliament. They are just now trying to make what's good for the goose good for the gander.
Well, possibly, but with the rule as it stands, it's clear that they couldn't have barred you on the basis of your colour, whether you had a degree or not. So, I mean, you may well argue that you wouldn't have got that position had you been black.
In reality.
But there was technically nothing barring you from... But anyway, no. I mean, to get back to the main point, which is that Steenhuisen's been the sort of battering ram for the DA.
Yeah.
In Parliament.
Yeah, no, he's good.
I mean, and one of the DA's strengths really has been its parliamentary performance, and that dates back to Tony Leon, Douglas Gibson, and indeed way back further, if you like, to Helen Suzman.
Yeah.
So it does seem, it does seem that there is a faction, if you like, in the DA that wants him out. Whether that's going to benefit the DA, whether it's going to benefit us in Parliament, is remains to be
obviously
seen.
Obviously, there's a lot of reasons for the opposition, all the opposition parties, all the other parties, to want him out.
Whether the degreed person would perform better, I don't think there's any reason to assume he will.
Peter?
Yes?
A man who does not have a degree, myself, can tell you right now that the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa says you only must be 18 years and above to be a member of Parliament.
Yeah.
That this is a rule coming from within the DA itself seems to just be targeting
him,
John Steenhuisen.
And it's coming from his province, isn't it?
From his province, from his own party. Those are the people who could not compete with him with all their degrees in any way.
Yeah.
Now, let's say this once and for all. He's absolutely one of the best members of Parliament. Mm. His performance, his lack of formal degree, not withstanding.
Yeah.
He's absolute. As he pointed out yesterday, we've got thieves in Parliament who's got multiple degrees that are totally useless at their jobs as well. I shall not name them unless you demand.
No, it's fine. We don't have time. But there's a long list.
There's a long list of thieves.
There's a long list of things. We've got 1 minute before we break. Just very, very quickly, the public protector, and this is her report into the Reserve Bank bailout of Bancorp. Did she make a simple error of judgment, as her counsel was arguing yesterday, or was she being mischievous and operating in that report with ill intent? In other words, is she captured? Rob?
No, she messed up big time. I mean, the issue is...
She just made a simple error?
I mean, in the absence of any facts that shows any specific agenda, you'd have to say...
But didn't she have secret meetings with security
and the presidency, which she specifically did not disclose to the Reserve Bank.
But doesn't that imply some kind of ill intent?
It certainly shows bad faith in the process. Whether it shows that she had another agenda that she was pursuing to perform...
What's worse, having just made a mistake or having tried to make a mistake?
Like Patrick said earlier, you know, the fact that she didn't do this for another agenda is even worse for her. It's this degree of screw-up.
So today, former Minerals Minister and I think Public Service and Administration Minister Ngwako Ramatlodi is giving evidence to the Zondo Commission in this very building. And he's giving the most amazing detail into the way Zuma, former President Jacob Zuma, involved himself in the affairs of government via the Guptas, or the way the Guptas were able to involve themselves in, to the extent that they even had one of Zuma's secretaries in their own compound in Sachsenwald compiling his diary according to their needs to communicate with him, right? Ramatlodi is saying to Judge Zondo, these people tried desperately to meet me. I always refused. I didn't go to the wedding. We were outraged at that Zuma allowed, and he says Zuma allowed, the plane to land at Waterkloof. We went to him, a group of ministers from the security cluster, and told him not to go. They were very angry that this family had been allowed to take control of the government, which seems to me, Patrick, to be the exact opposite of what Gwede Mantashe was saying yesterday, which is basically that you had to have some contact with the Guptas because that was just a fact of life. I mean, yeah. How much trouble is the ANC, and if the former, now the chairman of the ANC can't tell the truth the way Ngwako Ramatlodi has been telling it today?
Well, I mean, not a day goes by, I don't think, that the ANC is not drawn deeper and deeper into the whole state capture saga. And you'll recall that it was a few months ago, Zizi Kodwa, I think, writing in the Sunday Times, said, you know, the ANC is not on trial. But the evidence of Barbara Hogan, the testimony, as yet, I think, uncross-examined, and now Ramatlodi, and Mantashe himself, you know, shows that the ANC was indeed deeply involved,
yeah,
in
aiding, it was captured,
in aiding and abetting the Guptas. Part of it seems to have been on behalf of Zuma, or they all seem to have been sort of more or less terrified.
Yeah, I mean, what Ramatlodi seems to be saying to the commission is that, you know, people in the NEC genuinely liked Zuma because he's an affable guy and he's friendly, you know. And basically he said, listen, he told the NEC when they complained to him, these people have been good to my family, and I'm gonna, you know, so I'm not going to break my friendship with them, break my relationship with them. And what terrible consequences they run. I mean, because not only is the party now implicated in state capture, but you can see the way individual lives like Ngwako Ramatlodi were affected. I mean, he's an honorable guy. I mean, he might be a politician, but I mean, you know, he was, the day he was fired as minerals minister, he was in Zuma's office. This is a story I've heard, and I've published it a number of times, and nobody's ever contradicted it. He walked out, and there waiting outside to go into his office was Dudazani Zuma and Mosabenzi Zwane. Yeah. Dudazani had brought Zwane, who was the Gupta choice, to meet his dad.
Yeah.
Who probably didn't know each other.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I'm like, this entire Zondo Commission is, I agree, it's the ANC on trial. And if, I mean, as you think this should weaken the ANC to an extent, but I guess opposition parties are falling over themselves. But it is the ANC on trial. And what we're seeing emanate from Ngwako. Ngwako, I like the fact that you call him a politician, because he is, and there's things that he's done. I'm sure there's some questions and marks about him, as well as Gwede. In operating in the past 10 years, I mean, it's the fact Ngwako becoming minerals minister, there was something to play with the Gupta choices. He just didn't work out well for the Gupta family. But this is how the past 5 years, at least, yeah, of the ANC, yeah, how it was in the ANC the past 5 years, and everyone played a game. So some played it thinking that from within I can control it and try to safeguard the country, yeah, but and they'll be burned. Some of those very same people will get burned, yeah, in the process. But
yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing for the ANC, yeah, though, I mean, just as the sort of bad apples, if you, yeah, like, are being exposed, yeah, at the same time, people of quality, integrity, and honour are also stepping forth.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's nice.
Barbara
to know
Hogan, yeah, Ramatlodi, yeah, Pravin Gordhan, yeah, being the most spectacular, yeah, example, yeah, of that. Yeah. So maybe it cuts both ways.
But I mean, it's just proving so valuable, eh, Rob? I mean, Carol Payton written the lead in Business Day today, and she's gone and found some attachments to Pravin Gordhan's evidence, right? Mm. That the government actually agreed at the cabinet meeting on the day that Nhlanhla Nene was fired in December 2015, they agreed at that cabinet meeting to hide the true cost of the Russian nuclear deal from the public.
Yeah, I mean, and as we know by now, I mean, the nuclear project was Zuma's pet project.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted to push through, and by, yeah, having the right people that he thought in the right positions, it happened. I mean, you look at, like you talked about Zwani. I mean, Zwani was there to help the Guptas in terms of their mineral interests, yeah, in terms of Oak Bay, Optimum. And also, you know, we keep forgetting that Zwani is the guy who convened the commission looking into the banks and what,
yeah,
they did.
Yes.
So it's a definitive case study in corruption by that very instance of Ramatlodi being fired and Zwani being put in his place.
Yeah.
Ramatlodi, I think, has been the most devastating of the witnesses, actually, because to some extent we knew what Pravin Gordhan had said, he said before it repeatedly, we knew Barbara Hogenstein's, Roma Claudia, somebody else from outside, we hadn't heard in length on this, so I think his testimony is devastating. The secretary in the Zupta's compound is just
Staggering. Wasn't that fantastic? I mean, apparently she was there to, literally, the Guptas would say, we need to see him on Thursday, but, you know, 12 o'clock. And she would just adjust the diary to
need is actual strings, because that's a complete that's a puppeteering scenario.
Credit to the ANC for one thing. We should bash the ANC of the past 10 years, and I mean in the future it'll struggle, right? But I've never seen a party in this position of power the ANC is that has put themselves on trial. I mean, they can deny all they want that this is the ANC on trial, and this is them putting themselves out there. Yeah. But in a sense, it's the only way Ramaphosa can possibly clean and win the ANC. Is this commission almost for his own, is only, and the only thing he's got to count on, the opposition falls over, all over themselves, which they actually are doing.
Well, I mean, the process aren't really necessarily doing themselves any good. I mean, so Pravin Gordhan and the EFF have now become a thing, right? So he's gone and laid what I think are perfectly reasonable charges of crimen injuria against.
You're talking about Pravin laying the charges, not the EFF.
When I was editor of the EFM, I was charged once with crimen injuria. And it's scary. It's a criminal trial, and you're in the dock. I sat in the dock for 4 days for something someone else had written, and we hadn't picked it up. I think I'd been on holiday, but it was my responsibility. And I got up on a technicality. You know, I would have had a criminal record. I might have even gone to jail for a while.
Criminal record and a degree as a journalist.
And a degree as a journalist. I mean, you know, the only thing left there is sort of a case of whiskey, and then, you know, it would all be fine. But the EFF charges in return seem to me to be completely cynical, and so, you know, if Pravin Gordhan has $48 million in a Canadian bank account, Sikonati, I'm going to shoot myself on this show.
Don't make promises you can't keep, eh?
No, it's not possible.
That account isn't in his name, even. I mean, it's completely bogus. It's just one of those numerous red herrings that they throw up to divert attention from VBS, from all these things that are proving to be quite an albatross around the EFF's neck a couple of months before the elections.
But this is the thing. So it is building up nicely, because according to my count, the president has until Friday, week after next, to appoint an NDPP. Mm. And so it's a couple of days. He's got three names sitting in front of him. Two of them are extremely independent and feisty women prosecutors. He says he wanted female names on the list. They're not going to think twice about charging Julius with anything. In fact, they're not going to let the EFF mess him around, and they're certainly not going to let Cyril Ramaphosa mess him around either once they are appointed. And it's good for him, because he can say there's nothing I can do. You know, these people are out of control, whatever it might be.
Peter, the reality of the matter is that the EFF, like any despot, will have to find a diversion. So we don't look at VBS Mutual Bank. Mm. We don't look at the municipalities in Limpopo and everywhere where money seems to find its way to people connected with the EFF. Mm. So and we have to, of course, create this scarecrow that these minorities, these Indians, next it will be these white people. In fact, they have effectively swallowed the whole white monopoly capital. They took off where Bell Pottinger left and Black left first. Yeah. White monopoly capital, radical economic transformation. Mm. All thieves talk about those things. Mm. And that's where they are now. So don't you be distracted. How long have they known about this corruption of Pravin Gordhan, and why have they kept quiet? In fact, they did not only keep quiet. They said Pravin is the greatest man in that ANC only about 12 months ago.
By looking at this, when Julius was ANC Youth League president way back when all the on-point investigations came out, Ratanang, the exact same thing started. We started pointing fingers at the media. Remember that BBC journalists were kicked out, and like just this is a whole distraction of how Julius reacts to pressure on his. So this is almost carbon copy.
But it works. Yeah. I mean, that worked. That case disappeared.
But
case did not disappear. The case of tax was settled because some people came out for him and betted for him and gave him money from illicit cigarettes and all sorts of things. That's one. the charges again on a technicality can still be reinstated. That's Jacob Zuma was charged many years ago and he's going on trial now. So Malima knows this and all his EFF people know this, but they have to create again like all thieves and corrupt people do.
I want to take us back as a warning about EFF, right? Because at that ANC Youth League position, he was ousted as Youth League president. And I guess all of us here, even if he weren't an ANC's member or whatever, we all thought he's out of control, and the ANC dealt with him. Ramaphosa and the rest kicked him out of the ANC. I just imagine, under the pressure now, with the EFF that he has at his beck and call, what he's about to do to shake up the political dispensation in the next 6 months under this pressure. So I'm just wondering about how this guy...
He cannot do much. He's got, right now, 6%. Let's go to the election. I don't see them getting 10%.
But before the election, Ron is saying, you know, what can he do? But he's under pressure, Ron. I mean, the stuff coming out on VBS, particularly from Poli van Wyk at Daily Maverick, is devastating.
Yeah.
And if he's landed in a, you know, she's landed in a whole mountain of bank statements. Yeah. You can tell because we've seen a sight of one of them.
And it's linking to him. It's going.
It's linking directly to him.
I can't help but get the feeling that Malema, you know, whatever his personal agenda might be, seems to be sacrificing the whole future of the EFF.
Yes, that's what I see.
To serve a very short-term.
Yeah, I mean, no, it does seem that, because he, you know, as I think somebody said in a piece, I think it was Branko Brkić, you know, there's that line from one of Marlon Brando's movies: "I could have been something. I could have been a contender." And that's going to go away, I think. I mean, I think this must do them enormous damage.
I mean, they're not talking about land reform anymore. And we thought, okay, that was their ticket, right? We thought, and my post kind of play, but we thought, okay, the greatest elections, EFF will play on this inequality, and these are real issues we have in the country. It's Zilch gone. Now we're busy fighting Pravin Gordhan.
The conventional way in which we think that issue should affect elections has been turned upside down in the last couple of years. So I think anything could happen. You know, assuming in a rational world, this would have an impact, but you don't know that for sure.
Assuming Cyril Sikonathi, just to finish, Cyril appoints a tough person, clearly independent, whatever it might be, good track record at the NPA, probably helps him or her clean up some of the sort of Zuma remnants in the thing, because I think the deputies have to be removed by the president as well. You wouldn't want to take that job if you had... Yeah. To inherit those deputies.
So they are on suspension and fitness to hold office.
Yeah, so that's all that sort of stuff will happen. But assumingly, once that is done, then the stage is set for some real action to start happening.
Look, what now must happen is Nomcebo Chiba and Kuku Mkhwebi are basically out. The incoming prosecutor does their job, and we see arrests on VBS. There's a lot of evidence.
Absolutely.
We start with the Guptas, and we say goodbye to some politicians.
Yeah, there we go. Well, the next few weeks promise to be interesting. Stick with us. We won't go away. Well, we will, but for Christmas. But we'll always be with you. Take care. Thank you very much.